This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn-Mark Roshan-Kanisen and Noel Lim. It is 6 o'clock in the morning, Tuesday the 9th of March. And how are we all doing today? Noel, you're looking very lovely this morning.
Oh, thank you.
It's like, oh, it feels like you've all dressed up for a Tuesday.
Yes, that's because I have an interview later today.
Oh, exciting stuff. Okay. How about you, Roshan? How are you doing?
How am I doing? That's the that is the question, right? To be or not to be.
The existential question.
Existential.
Early in the morning.
Existentialism at 6 a.m. That's what we should call the show from now onwards. I think if you like that title, you should let us know over on WhatsApp and Twitter. Now take screenshots and show the bosses that we've got this movement towards a new name.
I'm actually happy to be just awake. Never mind existing.
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. It's Tuesday. It's a nice, we're heading towards the middle of the week. And Lynn, I'm all good. I'm interested to talk about what we've got going on today.
We do have a lot of exciting stuff.
It was really good and very interesting to hear all the different stories coming out of International Women's Day. Everyone was doing something from various perspectives. In the evening, I actually caught a session on Clubhouse that was particularly interesting. Cheryl Goh, I think, who's the chief marketing officer for Grab, had a bunch of country managers across Asia, Southeast Asia, who are like Vietnam, Cambodia, Philippines, I think all female-led. And they were all talking about their different experiences. And I have to say, it was very eye-opening and it gave you a little bit of a regional perspective as well. So yeah, plenty of stories, but you know, plenty of those conversations on BFM as well. I think you just have to head over to the app or the website and we should have a tag or something like that. I'll just search for International Women's Day. We had a grill yesterday, actually, on that note, where Hannah Yeo was on a panel and talked about the different aspects that and challenges that need to be addressed.
Yes, indeed. I think yesterday was a full day of coverage for International Women's Day. So do check it out on the app or on Spotify.
And we're not quite done yet because you're doing the 6 a.m. story. We'd like to take a look at some of the news flow over the past 24 hours. And one particular story that came up was that this proposal to that YB Zuraida is basically saying that she'll propose the EC to reserve 30% of MP seats for women. This automatically brings up some logistical issues in terms of how does this work. We're going to be talking about this and what could be the potential impacts in about 10-15 minutes. Just have a little bit of a light discussion at 6:15 in the morning about this.
And of
no
course,
biggie or anything.
Of course, later on at about 6:30, we're also taking a look at what's been happening around the world. Noel, give us a little bit of a teaser as to what we're going to be talking about.
Well, always a certain kind of news will sell, right? So Myanmar still continues to be a problem. And now I think there are more people going on strike. Also Hong Kong, there continues to be tensions there. And of course, the biggest interview, probably the interview of the century or the interview of Oprah's career, that's her interview with Meghan Markle, and where I think Markle made quite a lot of accusations about the palace or the firm.
Yes, that was certainly, I think, the thing that everyone was buzzing about yesterday as well.
Actually, maybe not everyone, right?
Yeah, well, most of the international media was focused on this. So we'll be taking a look at that later. And of course, at about 6:45, looking at our very own local papers and portals. If you want to weigh in, you can WhatsApp us 01878988899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. Up next, though, we've got some music and then we're taking a look at the stock market. So stay tuned. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Broken Finger Blues by Richard Swift. And you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 6:08 in the morning, Tuesday the 9th of March. And this morning, we've got an interesting article kind of staring at us in studio here. And it's titled, Why Are We Panicking Again? And this title is doesn't give much away, but the article is basically this man's experience of over the past couple of days. He noticed that on his Twitter feed, it seemed as if the world, and I quote, the world was ending in from his little corner of finance Twitter, he wondered, why is everyone panicking so hard about this? The stock market's actually not down that much, especially not if you compare it to the situation that we were in last year. So what's going on?
perspective, I think that's a big part of it, right? But so just to explain, this guy, his name is Nick Maggiulli, and he is a CEO for a wealth management firm in the US, right? And I particularly like his blog because he does a really good job in long form of breaking down, I think, very complex, complexities. Let's just put it that way. So in this article, he's basically talking about, you know, and I feel it as well. Last week, it felt like the world was ending in terms of the stock market. You know, everything was down. You know, everyone was talking about how red it was. The yield curves are going to kill us. You know, that sort of mentality was coming about. And if you looked at anywhere on financial media, it felt like the world was falling apart. But, you know, but if you take a look at the long-term trajectory of the stock market, we're still up over the last 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 10 years, you know, it's just that when things fall, people panic because it seems like how low could this go? How am I going to do? And particularly, we've seen a lot of exuberance over the last year and a lot of new stock market investors getting involved in it. So for all likelihood, this could be many people's first time going through a correction. And to that, I say, welcome. We've been waiting. It's a roller coaster of a ride. And I think this is best exemplified by one particular ETF, which is the ARK Innovation ETF, which has fallen about 28% since over the last month. And this is famously run by Cathie Woods, who's a very, very renowned investor. And this is an ETF that has, I think, a 10% of the holding in Tesla. It's got 7% in Roku. It's very innovative in its sense. That's where the name comes from, right? But if you take a look at a bit of a longer term there, over the last 1 year, it is up. Hold on. It's not helping me. All right. It is up 131%, even after a 31% drop. So I guess the big question is, if you start panicking about these things, and this is not just applied to the stock market, right? This is applied to, I think, a lot of things when the media starts covering it rampantly. People panic. And that really is, I guess, a recency bias that comes into all of it.
The media does feed into that frenzy, right? It does contribute, and in fact, it fuels it because that's how you sell news. You know, try to create some panic, or you know, just trying to create some headlines. So that's what the media does, and I guess we are partly responsible for that. So I think as an investor, so you don't want to be swept by all this panic, right? Or you know, or exuberance. And so I think it's really important to read widely. Don't get swept by emotions. Know what you're doing, why you're investing in a particular company, and also knowing, you know, where it stops, right? Where, you know, how much you would invest and how much you would put into the market, and you know, and why you're buying a particular stock.
Yeah, absolutely. And so Nick Maggiulli makes the point of the distinction between the people who are very vocal about certain stocks on social media and the actual majority of retail investors. So he calls them, well, it's a term that has been floating around recently, the difference between meme investors and retail investors.
And it's not meant to be derogatory in any sense, right? It's just a pure classification of the type of investor.
Yes, it is. So a meme investor perhaps is a someone who is definitely a little bit more swayed by
on the Bitcoin, the on
the
Tesla,
the day, you know, the excitement of this new kind of uncharted world of investing. Whereas the typical retail trader perhaps has a bit more of a diversified portfolio. They're generally the more silent majority, right?
No idea whether retail investors really do have a diversified portfolio unless they are investing in ETFs or funds or things like that. But it does bring up the question about financial education, stock market awareness, corporate evaluation. How do you go through these things? And luckily for you, I do have an answer. The answer is ringgit and cents. I've actually been covering a few topics on the show over the last few weeks on the back of all this news flow, right? And some of the topics that you might be interested in is I spoke to fund manager Danny Wong about the five things you should know before buying a stock. But also, I took a deep dive into the property sector in Malaysia with a property analyst from RHB Research to really get into the how to analyze stocks and how to understand where a company gets its valuation and corporate earnings from. These are all the questions you need to be asking yourself. Because if not, you're going to have a very hard time sleeping at night. Let me tell you that.
Yeah, I think the frenzy is always fed by people who are looking for short-term gains. And I think with the stock market, we know it's a casino, but one has to be cautious of, when putting your money. So I think this statement here by Jeff Bezos, when he asked Warren Buffett, if your style of investing is so simple, then why Doesn't everyone copy you? And Buffett replied, because nobody wants to get rich slow. So I think, you know, something to be learned there.
And on that point, right, I just want to bring up the annual letter from Warren Buffett last week, or was it the weekend? But basically, he did, you know, they do a comparison to how Berkshire Hathaway does against the S&P 500 on an annualized basis. And in there, I think it's over the last 40 to 60 years, the S&P 500 has averaged 10% per annum. That's a good return by any measure over the long term. Berkshire has averaged 20% per annum. So yes, it's beat the market. But this really brings to mind the expectations over what is a good return, right? 10% is actually a really good return. But because of the last year and all these different wonky expectations, everyone wants 100% return, 50% returns, or 7x. Expectations need to be grounded again. And that's where you really need to look into the historical situation to get a bit more grounded reality.
So check out the article. It's about, it's on Of Dollars and Data. So it's Nick Majuli's wider blog as well. So he blogs about quite a number of things. And do let us know what you think as well about this on social media. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899 or tweet us at BFM Radio. We're about to head into some messages and then we're going to be shifting gears and looking at a proposal to reserve 30% of MP seats for women here in Malaysia. Stay tuned to BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was the Rolling Stones with Jumpin' Jack Flash, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. So this morning, piece of interesting news on the back of International Women's Day yesterday as well. COMWEL, which is a short form for the Council of Malaysian Women Political Leaders, they're proposing that the Election Commission designate 30% of Parliament and State Assembly seats for women in the next general election. So this was a statement made by the Housing Minister, Datuk Zuraida Kamarudin, who's also the founder and president of COMWEL, who said the council is also going to be advocating for 30% representation for women in local governments and any other leadership and decision-making positions. And, you know, I read this article and I was a little bit bemused because we ran a poll yesterday asking what was the best way, what was the most effective way to remove, kind of to address gender inequality in the country. And quotas came in at dead last on the poll because we gave four options and everything else was kind of neck and neck at about 30%. But quota seems to be the thing that we always fall back on. And while I do think that quotas do have their place in ensuring that there is visibility of women in leadership to provide an example and a role model so that younger women also look at them and see that, hey, I can do that too. It's a longer term game that we're playing here, right? But I look at this 30% mandate of elected representation and I'm like, is this actually workable?
Yeah, so I'm wondering how will it work in reality, because MPs have to run for their seats, right? Also the state assembly men and women, they have to run. So what if they don't get elected? If not enough women get elected, then what do we do? Ask the men to step aside? And, you know, so it seems I think we need to think through this, or maybe we just need more information on what COMWEL has in mind. The benefit of having a quota, it just makes visible what the issue is. If we have any unconscious bias, now it's, you know, brought to the fore, it's more conscious, right? That we know what's going on. And also, it also brings to fore what are some of the issues why women cannot even meet that quota if it was indeed imposed. But I think what is more important to me, I feel, it's not about MPs and state assembly people, but it's actually the cabinet positions. I think we can start there, right? I mean, just making sure there's some diversity. It's not just all Malay men, for example, right? Or majority Malay men. Maybe we can see more women of any ethnicity or religion. And also maybe, but this is perhaps already true in many key ministries, like the Ministry of Finance, Economics and International Trade. We may actually have a lot of women in that leadership rank. I'm not sure actually, but I have a feeling because sometimes I do, you know, hear about a lot of women being senior managers in those departments. So I think in that sense, that would be great, because then you'll be truly in a decision-making seat.
Yeah, this would be, I don't know, I think quotas have a place, right? In the sense that, because from a perspective, quotas create a vacuum at the top. And in the sense that you have to fill that spot, right? And then you find a way to create the supply to meet that demand. It is not a perfect solution, but there are no perfect solutions anywhere in sight for any kind of issue. Yes, you can go through education and societal change and reform, but that takes time. It takes decades to get that kind of perspective to permeate through culture. Because end of the day, we live in a society where generations are living longer than ever, which means cultural norms of are still permeating through society longer than ever. You can't cycle through them as quickly as you would have in the past. So quotas create an environment where maybe the first generation of applicants or winners of the quota may not be the best of the best, but you create that representation and role models to encourage more people to do it. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just talking about gender. It also is about racial diversification diversity and all these different things. Basically, minority groups that need representation.
Age as well,
right? So, and because representation, in my belief, is important because you don't know what you don't know, right? As a person, as a particular mm-hmm. type of person. So you can't assume that you are able to represent all people. That's why we need parliament to have representation from all different sides. Think about parliament for a second. It is a quota system for different districts in the country. In a way, it is a quota, like every MP gets one seat, but not all MPs are voted by the same amount of people. So there is a certain level of mathematics that plays into that. So right now, we're just trying to change that perspective a little bit. And quotas get a lot of bad rep a lot of time.
Theoretically, MPs are supposed to be voted in by the same number of people, plus minus.
Like, yeah, we're talking about what's the situation on the ground right now.
Yes, you know, but that's supposed to be why election lines are redrawn every 5 years to account for the movement of people. But that's unfortunately not the case.
Is that what it's for? To account for the actual representation on the ground?
Yes, it is. Not necessarily the case that we see here in Malaysia, but then, you know, it's a work in progress.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, what was Damansara last time around? Tony Pua won with 100,000 majority, was that right?
I think he's like a mayor.
It's a 200,000 constituency.
Yeah, so 120,000 majority, that's how many constituencies?
I think Serdang is even bigger, Ong Kian Ming's constituency.
Amazing. Yeah.
So, you know, it's for me, coming back to this this proposal of 30% of women in parliament or in state assemblies, I think this would work if we were in a country where we had a proportional representation system.
Because right now the mechanics don't really help, right?
Yes.
Because I'm thinking exactly what you and Noel pointed out earlier. How does this work on the ground, this quota system?
So
proportional representation, then that conversation changes a little bit.
Yes. So, because that would mean that parties would be in charge of allocating these seats to, allocating these positions to, their members. And there are, you know, measures that you can say about, providing financial incentives for parties to field more women candidates. But let us know what you think about this as well. You can WhatsApp us at 01878988999, or you can tweet us over at BFM Radio. But right now, the 6:30 news is coming up, and to take you there is I Want That Man by Deborah Harry, BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Gone With The Wind Is My Love by Rita and the Tiaras, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn Mark, Roshan Kanisen and Noel Lim. 6:40 in the morning, Tuesday the 9th of March, and right now, as we do every morning, we're taking a look at what's been happening in the international news from around the world. And Myanmar continues to be a hotbed of unrest. There are reports this morning that three protesters were killed yesterday across the country as demonstrators continued to look to strike action in order to get their voices heard. And this is also following a weekend of night raids and arrests. In the main city of Yangon, shops, factories and banks were all closed. And photos have been circulating as well on social media with pictures of the bodies of protesters. It's not clear who were the ones who shot them, but witnesses say that both the military and the police were present at the protests.
Yeah, so I think most people or most media outlets are concluding that the police and military were involved. And here, this report by Channel News Asia, police and military have killed more than 50 people to quell daily demonstrations and strikes against the coup, according to the United Nations last week's report. report. So a military spokesman have not responded to calls asking for comments, and likewise the police. Now, I guess, you know, the crowds are not letting out, right? They are wanting to still stay and they still want to protest. It promises to be, it will probably get more ugly. I think the question is, what can other countries do, right? It seems like, you know, ASEAN countries are like, okay, you know, they say this is really not on, but yet, you know, the coup still continues. And really, I think a lot of people, I think a lot of experts are looking to China and as well as India because they border Myanmar and they have big investments there and also links to the military. I guess with China, they themselves have a record of, you know, being quite, taking quite authoritarian stand. How can they tell Myanmar to take a less authoritarian stand, right? So, yeah, so I think China does not want to interfere, but I think at one point, the Chinese government will have to do something in the background.
Yeah, I think some of the news we're seeing, I've got a Reuters report here, they're saying that Myanmar security forces cornered hundreds of young protesters overnight, and then I think it's on the back of the raids you were talking about, Lynn. And essentially, there is this basically a threat to hunt door to door, basically, to look for the different protesters, even as the United States and the United Nations have appealed for them to be allowed to leave, this so-called trapping. And you had UN Secretary General calling for maximum restraint and urges for the safe release of all without violence or arrest. But end of the day, it's just a call for restraint. There's nothing really direct that anyone can do about this, right? And that it's still within the sovereignty of Myanmar to solve this out.
And see, for me, the concern is that with every day that passes and every further report we have of protester deaths, it does seem as if democratic elections in Myanmar are getting further and further away, because the military originally, when they did seize power, they did promise to hold democratic elections, because, you know, the original complaint that started this all was electoral fraud. But considering that now the police and military are getting increasingly embroiled in clashes with protesters, the military is probably not very popular right now. So if that's the case and they go to the polls, they may lose again. And what's to say that, you know, this is a situation that is at all palatable to them?
Speaking of elections, Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam said she is unsure if upcoming legislative elections will be delayed again as Chinese lawmakers work behind closed doors in Beijing to curb opposition candidates' influence over future votes. I think we saw some of that last week in terms of who can qualify to run and things like that. To quote Carrie Lam, she said, "I cannot tell you at this point whether we need to further defer elections. We have a mammoth task ahead of us." And we saw some election overhauls announced on Friday, which will require Hong Kong to enact more than 20 pieces of principal and subsidiary legislation. This is the mammoth task that she says they have in front of them.
Yeah, so I think another piece of story here, the big one, is the interview, Meghan Markle with Oprah. Yeah, so I think
a natural transition, right, from Hong Kong to the British.
Yes, of course, you know, we have to keep focus, right? Stay focused. Anyway, Markle, I think really the interview gave her voice, right, and her side of story to put to rest some of the misreporting that's been happening over the years. It's quite obvious that some of the headlines over the last few years has been more favorable of her sister-in-law, Catherine Middleton. So I guess that's Markle's chance to set the record straight. It does raise a lot of issues about the palace or the firm. She does portray herself as a victim, but I think after that interview, I think she's not going to be the only one who's the victim. I think that's just going to be more than that.
Yeah, this is pretty damaging to the UK royal family and the image that they have portrayed through the British press. So a couple of other revelations from the interview between Meghan Markle, Prince Harry and Oprah include that the royal family apparently cut Prince Harry off financially at the beginning of last year. His father stopped taking his calls. So this is, it's been quite a roller coaster in terms of how this has turned out for
and
them.
And fun fact, it drew 17 million viewers. That's quite a number, especially in this day and age.
Yeah, so this thing about cutting him off financially, they did say in their earlier statement, the couple did say in their earlier statement that they wanted to be financially independent.
Yes, so I think they're working towards that as well. So we're about to head into some messages right now, and then we're going to be taking a look at our own local papers and portals to see what's happening there. Be sure to stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, that was Town Called Malice by The Jam, and you're listening to The Morning Run with Lynn, Roshan and Noel. 6:51 in the morning, Tuesday the 9th of March, which means that we are turning our attention to what the local papers have to say today. Now, I have the Star in front of me, and their big headline here is a story about fake datoships. So this is continued on page 3, because it appears that there is talk about a national registry, a national body to verify and issue special cards to those who've been issued, those who have been given a title. So this is on the back of the fact that we have had growing reports of fake datoks in the country. It's causing a lot of alarm, so steps are being taken to resolve the issue. There have even been reports of fake datok titles being sold online. So that's an interesting couple of pieces in Star Page 3.
Yeah, so you can sell anything online, right, including degree certificates. And so what's on the front page of the New Straits Times? Non-frontliners jump the phase one queue at one vaccination centre only because of unclear implementation. And this information from a whistleblower puts the end of this problem, says the minister, the Science and Technology Minister, Khairi Jamaluddin, who, as we know, is in charge of rolling out this COVID-19 vaccine. So they are taking all steps to ensure that only frontliners get the vaccines. And if there's any excess vaccines, that will be distributed to other centres with frontliners.
I've got the Malaysian Reserve, which points to job creation remaining a challenge in Malaysia. And this is basically pointing to the fact that many employers are still on employment freezing mode, which could affect job creation in the private sector at least, while we wait for, I guess, the vaccination process to really fully roll out across the country. And they spoke to Malaysian Employers Federation Executive Director Datuk Shamsuddin Bardan on this, saying that the government should therefore consider extending the wage subsidy program to not only retain existing employees, but also to create higher value-added jobs as a short-term solution. This is going to be the crux of many things, right? Because at the end of the day, the employment factor is going to be of the utmost importance, especially in the longer term. And then, you know, there's a lot of talk around the 12th Malaysia Plan right now, which is supposed to take Malaysia to high income status and all of that. I wonder how far back COVID-19 sets us, but also whether that was high income is realistic at this point, right, for the entire nation, as opposed to a stratified segment of the populace instead. That's going to be a big thing to note, because even in the US, if you're taking a look at labor numbers, they're improving, but not to the pace I think that was. They're still far from full employment, which is then shows you there's a little bit of a gap between expectations over bond yields and the actual situation on the ground in terms of employment.
And of course, speaking of the 12 Malaysia plan, we're going to be having a deeper conversation about that at about 7:45 with Tricia Yeo, CEO of Ideas. So do stay tuned for that conversation. Another article that I just want to quickly spotlight in the Star as well is more vaccines arriving soon. So it appears that Malaysia is set to receive Pfizer and Sinovac doses by next week. I think the country is also in talks potentially to increase some of the amount that of a vaccine that it has ordered from names like Pfizer, BioNTech, as well as Sinovac.
The health minister, Dato' Sri Dr. Adam Baba, he's also come out to say that they are planning to rope in private healthcare sector, the doctors in the private sector, to administer the vaccines as well. So that will certainly help accelerate our program. And this other story that is reported by the New Straits Times, the High Court yesterday heard that a total of 17.9 million ringgit from Yayasan Akal Budi was taken out by Dato' Sri Dr. Ahmad Zahid Hamidi without the approval of the Charity Foundation Board of Trustees. And this was revealed by the MACC, or the Malaysian Anti-Corruption Commission, who's investigating this case.
Right. And just a quick roundup of some of the other news that came out yesterday. Quite a bit, actually, because we had former Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng in the news, him offering himself as a witness if legal action is brought up against the Inland Revenue Board amid complaints that the government is going after taxpayers who haven't already paid their due under a tax amnesty. And speaking of the tax man, we are in tax season right now. From 1st of March until the end of April, the e-hasil, you can start filing your taxes online. And don't procrastinate. Probably want to, like the enrollment in the vaccine program, you want to do this as early as possible. Get it off the books and pay your taxes as early as possible. Just don't forget. And if you want some tax tips, Ringgit and Sense is always there to help you out. You can always check that out. But
Thursdays at 9:30.
But other things that happened, there was also a bit of, I think, drama between PKR in the PKR Pakatan Harapan ranks, because PKR apparently wants a meeting with MACC Chief Azam Baki to hand over purported evidence of an attempt to buy over opposition MPs. And on another note, Pakatan Harapan has revealed that their seat negotiations for GE15 are ongoing, and that they do not rule out cooperation with UMNO. And this comes off the back that UMNO is, you know, seemingly broken up with Bersatu at this point, as in for going into next GE.
So is Pakatan Harapan going to be UMNO's rebound relationship? I guess we'll have to wait
and see.
But that is all of the news that we have for you from the local papers this morning, because we're about to head into the 7 o'clock news bulletin, but then more business news and analysis for you. So now we're heading into some music. Here is Ain't That a Shame by Fats Domino, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.